Hello, all sentient beings, and welcome to Transmissions Alt Mode, where we talk all news, comics, and media related to the... On this episode of Transmissions Alt Mode, we review Star Trek vs. Transformers Issue 2. We get a look at the Transformers Generation book cover art, and the convention news just keeps coming in. Today is Friday, December 7th, 2018, and this is episode 106 of Transmissions Alt Mode.
Welcome to Transmissions Alt Mode, the podcast that's got two tickets to the Bumblebee movie. I'm your host, Charles, a.k.a. Big C, and I'm joined by the excellent Transmissions team. Jeremy, a.k.a. Yakko.
Hey, how you doing?
And Daryl, the Cybertronian Beast.
How's it going? Let's talk Transformers.
All right. We're back again to talk Transformers toys and comic, or not toys and comics, Transformers comics and media.
Got all excited for a minute.
It's been a few days since you've talked toys. Yep.
Yeah, Transformers comics and media. So we start off, as always, with new donations, and we are going to give a thank you to Chris, who just became a... What is that level? It's a good level where he gets to listen to stuff and, you know... Congratulations.
It's a good one.
It's,
oh, sorry, Chris. We are phoning
just giving
it
Mike stuff
today.
you are just giving my... It's the talk back to us level. No, sorry. It's the goodie bag level. It's doing good.
Good job, Chris.
Well done. You're getting in at our... At our absolute like peak performance level here.
Well, to make up for that terrible delivery, Chris, I will mention your podcast, the Cantina Cast. Listen to their Star Wars themed podcast, and Jeremy has had some run-ins with those folks there in that podcast network, right?
In a good way.
Yeah. Their podcast network is called Ear Glue Media. And they have The Basement, which is the Ready Player One podcast that I guested on. And then that introduced me to the Cantina Cast. And it's great. It's a great Star Wars show. So, yeah, they're going to be at Star Wars Celebration. So I'm hopefully going to meet up with them there.
Cool. Also, want to remind you that TeePublic is having another sale, so if you wanted to get some Transmissions merchandise and you missed out on all the other sales they had, they have rebooted the Black Friday sale from December 3rd to 13th. Everything is 30% off, which means the base t-shirts are just $14. There are some deadlines if you want to get stuff out before Christmas, particularly in the U.S. You need to order before December 11th to get the best shipping to get it there by Christmas. We'll have a link in the show notes for international stuff, so you can make sure you get stuff squared away. We hope you will take advantage of that. And if there's any other stuff you see at TeePublic that you'd like to get, as long as you go through the Transmission store, that gives us a little kickback. So just go to transmissionspodcast.com/shop and you can check out all our stuff and all the stuff from TeePublic. All right, let's get into some comics news. So let's start off with some art from Marcelo Mater. And his artwork is featured in the in Brazil's Museum of Image and Sound. So specifically, his Power of the Primes Predaking artwork. It was put on display, and it's going to be there until March of next year in Sao Paulo in Brazil.
So, Daryl, are you going to plan a trip to go down there?
And go look at it? Maybe. No, probably not. It's pretty nice, though, this art.
And it's right there next to a framed copy of Transformers G1 number 1. From 1984. And yeah, Marcelo's art is very nice. It's awesome.
Yeah.
He's a great artist, done a lot of work on Transformers and has done a lot recently in like box art and toy art, But also, he's done some of the art direction in Forged to Fight too, didn't he?
I believe so. Yep.
Yeah. So it's cool. Congratulations, Marcelo, for getting your art there. All right. Next, we've got more information about the Transformers Generations book. This is the 2019 iteration of this book. This is from the Japanese publisher Hero X, where they do a book every year highlighting all the toys that came out that year. This is up on Amazon.jp for 3,100 yen, which is about $27.25. And it's supposed to come out December 10th. So it's right around the corner. Usually these books do have some teasers of upcoming Masterpiece figures. So I'm sure we'll talk about that when the book is out. I think we mentioned that already. But yeah, we've got the cover image here. It's I think it's an homage to the old box art cover box art images from the G1 toys. Looks pretty cool. It's got Optimus Prime and Rodimus Prime fighting Predaking. All the Power of the Primes figures there. See Prime Masters there. Starscream's there. Next is the James Roberts Ask Me Anything. So last week, James Roberts did an Instagram Ask Me Anything for all the More Than Meets the Eye Lost Light stuff. And we've got the... So the video only lasted for 24 hours. Hopefully someone archived it and it'll be up somewhere. We don't have a link to it yet. Hopefully by the time this show goes up, we'll be able to have a link in our show notes for it. But we do have a partial transcript where it has lots of questions that James Roberts asked about, or James Roberts answered about More Than Meets the Eye and Lost Light. In particular, I just wanted to mention a couple things like the Chrome Dome and Rewind stuff. There was going to be a deeper plot twist to the Chrome Dome and Rewind story. So I won't get into it here, but there's a pretty detailed explanation as to what he was going to do with those characters if he had more time in the series, which I think is really interesting. And there's a wide range of questions. People ask a lot of questions. He got
500 questions.
Yeah, 500 questions. He didn't answer them all, but he answered a lot. So you can check that out. But yeah, it was a. I didn't get a chance to see it myself, but it seems like it was a really, really good discussion, I guess. All right, so that's all our comics news. So let's move on to our comic review. Okay, this week we are reviewing Star Trek versus Transformers number 2. This is written by John Barber and Mike Johnson, art by Philip Murphy, colors by Leonardo Ito and Josh Burcham. Letters by Krista Meissner. Edits by Chase Maratz and David Marriott. And publisher Greg Goldstein. We've got three covers. Cover A is by Philip Murphy and shows Optimus and Megatron duking it out while Kirk beams in below them. Or is he beaming out? Not really sure. Cover B is Spock, or the art is by Marcelo Ferreira with colors by Thomas Deere, and it's Spock having a mind meld with Prime and seeing all the images of Prime's memories, particularly the fight between Prime and Megatron at the dam, where Prime has I think he's swinging his energy axe, or maybe not.
Yep, he is.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah, you can see it behind him.
But Megatron doesn't have his flail out for some reason. Oh, well. And the retailer incentive cover by Derek Charm shows Optimus Prime doing the Vulcan greeting symbol with Spock, to Spock, while Rex and Kirk look on. So, Daryl, which of these covers floats your boat?
I really like cover A. I think that one's a really good one. I think Kirk is beaming out. I don't think he would be having his communicator out if he were beaming in. But that's just me. You can think whatever you want.
I think that's probably an accurate assumption. Yep.
But yeah, no, I like this one here. Cover A just looks a little bit more like, I don't know, the lines are probably more to my liking. Cover two or cover B is also very good, but yeah, I think cover A is just cleaner.
Jeremy, which cover do you like?
I also like cover A. It's really good, clean line art. Cover B, there's the Transformers on cover B. I really like Spock. There's just something off about him. It might just be the animation style. I don't know, but it does also kind of look more like Zachary Quinto than Leonard Nimoy. So maybe that's it too.
Hmm.
Cover B was also pretty good. But I just, cover A just has that whole G1, mm-hmm. you know, look to it.
Cybertron on cover B looks amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Like I said, all of the non-human related stuff in cover B is really good.
All right, I guess I will make it a clean sweep and also pick cover A for all the reasons you stated. Although I do think that, so the beam effects, those are from like the recent movies, right? That's not the traditional beam animation or something. I don't know. The 2009 Star Trek movie introduced those kind of circular.
Yeah, I think so.
Beams. I'm not going to comment as to not get it wrong.
I think you're right. I can't remember how the original series did beaming, but I think you're right about the more recent J.J. Abrams movies and their beaming effect.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I know the live action one did it, like the original live action show did it differently, but I don't know about the animation. Mm.
All right, not important. let's get it.
We get this right.
So let's get into the story. Continuing from last issue on planet Cygnus 7, Spock, McCoy, and Scotty worked to revive the offline Optimus Prime. Prime was incapacitated in the battle last issue when he was trying to protect the humans in the Federation mining colony from the Decepticon attack. Captain Kirk mistook him for a hostile and shot him with his phaser. Scotty isn't having any luck reactivating Prime, but McCoy isn't sure it's a good idea anyway. Spock has another idea. If the robot is a living being, maybe he can connect to it through a Vulcan mind meld. He reaches out to touch Prime's unconscious form and creates the mental link. Spock's mind is flooded with images of a metallic war-torn planet, Cybertron. He sees images of the Autobot and Decepticon ships leaving Cybertron and crashing on Earth. They awaken millions of years later to resume their war, and Spock sees the truth. Prime lives to protect all life from the Decepticons. The images overwhelm Spock, and he breaks contact. But this connection was enough to reawaken Optimus Prime, and he regains consciousness. Prime introduces himself to the humans and thanks them for their help. He asks what happened to the Decepticons, and Spock tells him that they fled after the Enterprise attacked, and he's the only robot left on the planet now. But Prime corrects him. He's not. We cut to the underground chamber Kirk and Emress were exploring where the Autobots had emerged last issue. Jazz attacks the humans and demands to know what they did with Optimus Prime. Kirk doesn't recognize the name, but Jazz and the other Autobots don't believe or trust humans anymore and continue the attack. Finally, Kirk understands. These robots must be referring to the one he encountered on the surface that can change into a truck. He tells him that he inadvertently injured their friend, but he realized that he was trying to protect them from the other hostile robots, the Decepticons, that attacked them. After they drove off the hostiles, they detected signals coming from underground that turned out to be the rest of the Autobots. Finally, Kirk makes them understand that they come in peace, and the Autobots stand down. Back on the moon of Cygnus 7, Megatron asks Klingon Commander Kuri how they found their base, Trypticon. Curry replies that they weren't looking for it, they just needed a place to set down for repairs after their ship was damaged by the Enterprise. Curry proposes a villain alliance with the Decepticons so that they can defeat their mutual enemies and take over the mining colony. Starscream questions why they need these puny creatures anyway, since they're just as small and weak as the humans. Curry is angered at this insult to his honor, but Megatron sees that Starscream has a point. He grabs Curry and asks what can the Klingons provide to help them. And Curry asks if Megatron has heard of cloaking technology. Back in the underground chamber on Cygnus 7, the Autobots tell Kirk and his crew the story of their time on Earth. The Autobots fought to protect Earth from the Decepticons. They disguised themselves as Earth vehicles to keep a low profile, but their war escalated. But then the humans started their own internal World War III and ignored the Autobots altogether. So the Autobots left Earth in their Titan, Fortress Maximus, searching through the galaxy looking for another source of Energon. They were pursued for years by the Decepticons and their Titan Trypticon. Above the planet that would come to be known as Cygnus 7, the Decepticons caught up to the Autobots again, and history repeated itself. Fortress Maximus crashed and was buried underground for centuries. Until the Cygnus 7 miners delved deep into the ground and accidentally reactivated Fortress Maximus's systems. A repair protocol reactivated both the Autobots and Decepticons, and here we are. Meanwhile, in space above the planet, Lieutenant Arax is in command of the Enterprise. He's tracked the Decepticons to the nearby moon and is going to investigate. He contacts Spock back on the surface and tells him their current status. Spock catches Arax up on everything they've learned and that these robots are living beings underneath their metal. But before they can talk further, Arax and the Enterprise arrive at the location on the moon where the robots should be. But it's just an empty hole in the ground. Too late, Arax realizes the Enterprise has walked into a trap. The Klingon ship, apparently repaired, decloaks and attacks. Arax orders the shields up, but the Enterprise takes damage. He tries to contact Spock and tell him that they're under attack, but Soundwave jams that transmission. Soundwave tells Megatron the human forces are divided and Megatron is ready to conquer the planet with the Klingons as full partners, of course. On Cygnus 7, Kirk, Emres, Sulu, and the Autobots below ground prepare to rendezvous with Optimus, Spock, McCoy, and Scotty on the surface. But before they can return to the surface, an explosion collapses the entrance to the underground chamber, trapping them below. Prime and the humans turn around to confront Decepticons led by Starscream, back for another attack. Underground, RC asks Ratchet how they can fight back against the Decepticons since they're outnumbered and outgunned. Ratchet has an idea, but it'll be risky. Kirk smirks and asks, exactly what kind of risk does he have in mind? And that's the end of the issue, to be continued. So, I think it's an okay crossover. I don't know, nothing's particularly wowing me about this so far. I did like the idea of the, you know, Megatron and Starscream not really taking the Klingons seriously, but then the Klingons have their cloaking technology and they use that to their advantage. So I like that there's a reason for the Decepticons to team up with the puny fleshlings. I thought that was cool. I also thought it's interesting that there's no time travel involved with the Transformers on Earth. I guess the Transformers time on Earth was just the Earth in the Star Trek universe, where in Star Trek, in the Star Trek chronology, there's a World War III that, you know, eventually that there's a nuclear war. And then after the nuclear war, the Earth society rebuilds itself. So I guess they're saying that, you know, after nuclear war, the humans didn't really care about the Autobots. But I wonder why the Autobots and Decepticons just didn't participate in it, or even, you know, the Autobots, I think they try and stop World War III, but it was also really weird seeing how hostile Jazz was to the humans. That was, I guess he saw some stuff during that World War III episode. Some of the flashback images was interesting. Like when you see Fortress Maximus flying away from Earth on the ground, I think those humans, I think that's Zefram Cochrane, and then
Yeah.
Yeah, whatever character Alfre Woodard played in Star Trek First Contact, I think they're on the ground, like, watching Fortress Maximus fly away. I thought that was an interesting nod to Star Trek canon. And we do see a scene of, like, an attack on Autobot City, which is interesting because, you know, clearly the movie didn't happen in this universe because Prime is still alive and Unicron never ate anything, so... It's a little weird. For the most part, the art is pretty good, although I don't really like the way Bumblebee is drawn. Bumblebee and Ratchet's faces look really weird to me. But other than that, I like the art in the issue. So, Daryl, what were your thoughts on this issue?
It was fine. Like you said, nothing really like stands out as a, you know, a really awesome part. I agree with you that Bumblebee's face is all fucked up. it's at one point he's, you know, his eyes are like too far apart. Then the next he's got this weird shit eating grin on his face. His face is making all kinds of weird shapes. But all in all, I thought the art was really quite good. You know, really resonating back to that G1 cartoon. Yeah, looked really great. They're doing a really good job of kind of integrating Windblade into that group, giving her a G1 cartoon style. This is not easy to do. She's way more detailed than any of those original characters were. So yeah, I thought that was pretty good. Optimus Prime is, you know, he's Optimus Prime, but the art, his, like, midsection has typically a silverish bar on it, which is part of the aesthetics of the truck mode. In this comic, I tried to find just being an error in one page, but it seems to be throughout. It's colored very dark, almost like a dark gray, which is just, it looks odd. So perhaps a mistake. Yeah, other than that, that's really the only mistake I saw. I liked the nod, like you pointed out about Zefram Cochran. I totally saw that as well, and I thought, yeah, hey, that looks like you know, that scene from First Contact. And yeah, so that was pretty cool to see. The fact that they had the exact same kind of origin story on this planet that they had on Earth seemed kind of odd. But if they've got the same protocols and they never really change them, then I guess then that still works. Although Fortress Maximus is a character among himself, so, you know, maybe he wouldn't have the same, you know, protocols installed. But apparently he does. So there you go. But it's a fun book. This issue doesn't really do much to forward the plot. It just kind of dumps a lot of, you know, info on you about where they've came from and who they are and what's going on and how they've come to be. We finally do get an actual name, though, for Arachnid. That was an assumption on issue one, because she's one of the three that are attacking the Autobots at the end of the book there, and Starscream actually does name check her, so you do get an actual name on her there. So yeah, I mean, it's not a book that I'm like desperate to read when it comes out, but it's been fun so far.
Yeah, I mean, you'd think with these sophisticated computer systems, can't they have like just a camera that looks like, is it an Autobot symbol or a Decepticon symbol? If it's a Decepticon symbol, don't reactivate it. I don't know. There's not a lot of Autobots and Decepticons left. Like, we have what? Like, Jazz, Bumblebee, RC, Windblade, and Optimus Prime. So that's five Autobots. And then we've got Megatron, Soundwave, Starscream, Arachnid, I guess Thundercracker. So, like, is everyone else dead? Or are they all somewhere else? It's kind of weird that... We don't have, you know, we don't have a bigger cast here or some explanation for where the other people are.
Yeah.
I don't know. Jeremy, what are your thoughts?
I enjoyed it as well. I have the same comments on Bumblebee's face. It's horrific. It's not something that should be, you know, able to get wrong as badly as it's done here. But other than that, I thought it was, the art was fine. That World War III scene, though, what the humans are wearing there is right out of Star Trek II. Mm. So, or not Star Trek II, but Star Trek also.
Is that the
you see that in some of the
eugenics wars or something?
Yeah. One issue I have is when they are being reactivated on this other planet, why was nothing scouting for vehicle forms?
Mm-hmm.
Why do they not have futuristic Star Trek vehicle forms?
Or beast modes.
Yeah, or beast modes. Whatever. I mean, it just seems like if they reference it's the same thing that happened on Earth, it's not, because there was nothing to scan for, you know, vehicle modes. Or maybe it was just because they were underground. Maybe it couldn't.
Mm-hmm.
There was no, you know, volcano thing for it to fly out of. But other than that, this was just basically a big info dump and the standard, like, you know, heroes fighting each other, villains fighting each other before they both form teams, and then we get the next issue. So pretty standard there, but I do like it. I like the whole Vulcan mind meld thing to kind of get some of the backstory. That was neat. So, I mean, this continues to just be a crossover that, you know, in with all the different crossovers we've had, this is definitely one of the better ones.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Yeah. I also liked how they used Spock's Vulcan mind meld to give you the Transformers backstory. And then when they have Bumblebee start to give his exposition, he's like, yeah, it all started about four. Don't worry about that. Let's skip to the part on Earth. So,
yeah, let's get to the Star Trek part. And yeah, the crossover with the Zefram Cochrane thing, that's a nice touch.
Yeah. All right. Well, I guess that's it for Star Trek versus Transformers. And I guess everyone, if you're listening, you might already have issue 3. So I guess you guys know that there's a big twist there in issue 3. But we'll probably talk about that in a future episode. Maybe next week, maybe not. We don't know. But stay tuned for that. All right, so let's move on to some Transformers media news.
All right, and we're going to jump right into Bumblebee the movie stuff. And we've got some advanced screenings happening in the U.S., the U.K., and Canada. So take a look at your local theater and see if you're able to go out and watch the movie early. The screening date is December the 8th. And I know both Jeremy and Charles were able to secure some tickets.
Yep.
So that'll be fun.
Taking my kids and Jimmers.
Oh, wow. Cool.
All your
all my kids.
Yeah. Cool. Well done. So, yeah, lucky you. You won't be able to talk to anybody about it until, you know, the rest of us see it. But enjoy. I did check on the Canadian side here. There are only 13 theaters in the entire country showing this thing. So you suck, Cineplex. bring some more theaters here to, you know, show this thing early. But yeah, so anyway, moving on, we've got a Bumblebee movie panel at CCXP 2018 in Brazil. So if you're in Brazil, make your way down to that convention and check it out. I'm sure they'll be talking about that movie and everything going on. There's a special event happening at Tokyo Comic Con for the Bumblebee movie. So lots of stuff happening. There's a new designing G1 featurette going on the online here. So take a look at that. It's a video. And you can...
That was neat. And it actually has a 3D turnaround model of the Optimus Prime from the Bumblebee movie.
Yeah. So keep a lookout for more stuff like that as the movie gets closer. We've got an official coloring activity and paper craft sheets for Bumblebee the movie. A lot of marketing and stuff is more marketing materials are going to come out, and you're going to see Bumblebee the movie on all kinds of different crazy crap, like Little Bites and Pop Secret stuff. So this is a Bumblebee promotion. It's a and movie ticket discount. This is looks like. First off, it's $5 off the movie ticket if you buy it through the Fandango app. So, cool. I expect that's only US. And then in, for Pop Secret, there's a reward offer for people using Fandango.
$8.
$8? Okay, cool. Cool. Yeah. Anyway, only for Americans. We've got another featurette here as well. The origin story featurette. I don't want to spoil anything in the movie if you don't want to watch it. But take a look if you don't mind the little spoiler action. And lastly, getting a little bit away from the Bumblebee movie, we've got Cyberverse Episode 13 is now available on Hasbro's YouTube channel. Again, their Hasbro channel or their YouTube channel is region locked. So if you're outside of America, then you cannot watch this. It makes no sense, I know, but that's what they do. And that's it for media news.
All right. Yeah, let's move on to some convention news.
All right. The TFCon LA announcements are in full swing. So buckle up. We've got a few. The first one is artist Alex Milne has been announced as attending. He really needs no introduction to this audience here, but he is going to bring his artistic skills to TFCon LA. Transformers writer Donald F. Glut is going to be there. He was a writer for the G1 cartoon series.
Glut.
Oh, sorry. Donald F. Glut is going to be there. He also wrote episodes of G.I. Joe, Masters of the Universe, Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends, DuckTales, and The Mighty Orbots. And he also wrote the novelization of The Empire Strikes Back. So that's pretty cool. Voice actor Lori Fasso is going to be there. And he was the voice of Dive Bomb, Orion Pax, Rampage, and Skydive in G1. And he will be there on Saturday and Sunday. Writer Ron Friedman is going to be there. If you do not know his name, he was one of the original writers for the Transformers movie back in 86 before it had significant rewrites. And I believe our friends at Autopod Decepticast have an episode up pretty recently talking about how that differed from the movie we actually got. So check that out too. And he also scripted some of the miniseries for G.I. Joe, Real American Hero.
It's interesting. I don't think we've ever had Flint Dilley and Ron Friedman at the same convention, have we? I'm curious if there will be any kind of fist fight or something.
Cage match.
I can't imagine so. They'd.
Yes, that'll be interesting for sure.
No, I was going to say they kind of they dispute like who takes credit for what on, you know, how the movie story came out.
Mm-hmm. Well, we will have Yoshi make sure that he's at both of their panels. But that is the U.S. side of TFCon. On the Canadian side, TFCon Toronto has their hotel block up. This will be July 12th through 14th in Mississauga, Ontario, Canada, and the discounted price is $110 per room. And that's obviously Canadian. So if you're like me or Charles, it might be like $3. I don't know. But go ahead and book the room now if you're there so you can make sure you're around other Transformer fans and not by some random wedding that happened to me the first time I was there. So that is all of the news. It was a lot of announcements this week.
Yeah, that's the G1 Super Mega Reunion is really shaping up. So Colin's delivering on his promises for a Mega G1 reunion.
Yeah, I will note that Donald Glut and Ron Friedman both did not say that they would only be there certain days. So I'm suspecting they're there for the whole weekend. But Lori Faso is only there Saturday and Sunday. Mm.
All right. Well, let's finish up the show with some feedback. All right. So on the, I guess this is on the YouTube version of episode, Alt Mode episode 103, where we reviewed, I guess, was it Unicron number 6?
Yeah, I think so. Yep.
Yeah. So this is from a commenter. Goes by Infinite Octopaw, and this commenter says, I don't agree about the Lost Light thing. That story wasn't about killing everyone. Also, I thought in the IDW timeline, Ironhide was one of the last of the survivors of the Civil War at the end of the 2009 series. He got to make a big speech in front of the next generation and stuff. I'm not crazy, right? Okay, so let's tackle these two things. I guess he's for the first part, he's talking about maybe we made a comment about how, or I think this was you, Daryl, who said you were expecting a few more deaths at the end of Lost Light. Okay. But I don't think we said that we thought Lost Light was about killing everyone. I just thought that I think Lost Light or More Than Meets the Eye had good deaths. And I'll say good in, you know, quotes, that deaths that mattered, that meant something. I think
it also got a bit of a reputation.
Yeah. And we were just expecting, you know, more of that maybe. James also got the reputation for doing quite a few fake out deaths. So, you know, I guess there's a,
or resurrections. Yeah.
So I guess there's a mixed bag. In terms of your second part about Ironhide, I think we've discussed this on the show previously. I think a different person asked about this like a while ago, but I'll just repeat this. That vision was invalidated in Robots in Disguise. So that vision of the future that was at the end of the 2009 series, John Barber took that as a hallucination that Ironhide had, and that was invalidated by Dark Cybertron. So Dark Cybertron was supposed to be the event that would have brought that future to come to pass. But since they stopped Dark Cybertron, that's why that future never happened. So Ironhide, and in the series, they had issues where Ironhide had a crisis because since he no longer knew what the future was going to be, he had a bit of a, like, he felt unsure of himself, and he didn't want to, since he didn't know what was going to happen next, he was unsure of himself. He was unsure of that the future was going to turn out all right. So that 2009 ending, it's gone. It's retconned away. It's been retconned away for several years now. So yes, it happened in the comic, but it was always just a vision of the future. It never came to pass. That, you know, that happens when different writers take over books. So, you know, it's no longer the end point for the series. And we saw that because Ironhide died at the end of Unicron number 6, and Cybertron's been destroyed. So you can't really have that ending the way it was envisioned. Also, Alpha Trion's been dead for, you know, a year in the comics. So, that's not really that. So, you know, that has been retconned. I'll just say. So are we clear? It's gone. It's retconned. Another comment. This came to us from Facebook. This was Martin Wells. I forget which episode this was in where we talked about how IDW canceled the UK Classics comics. Or at least Classics Volume 6. And Martin was not happy. He said, that's a crock, which we agree. Sorry, Martin. It's unfortunate, but yeah, it doesn't look like we're getting any more of the UK classics from IDW. But maybe tweet to John Barber. He is the editor in chief now. Maybe there's a chance to reverse the decision. Be polite. Don't insult him or yell at him. But you know,
make sure you tell him Charles sent you. Actually, don't do that. Please don't do that.
Maybe say you'll pay money if they release volume 6 of the UK classics. Maybe that'll help.
Say that you already had money budgeted and you were just waiting for it to come out so you could spend the money.
Exactly. All right, that's all for feedback this week. Again, want to remind you that if you want to leave us feedback, you can go to transmissionspodcast.com/feedback. You can leave us emails and voicemails, we will play those on the show. You can also contact us on various social media, as our commenters this week did. So let us know what you think. And that'll do it for this episode of Transmissions Alt Mode. Thanks, everyone, for listening, and we will see you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Later.
Hey everyone, thanks for listening to this episode of Transmissions. But just because this episode is over doesn't mean the Transformers fun has to stop. Join us and other Transformers fans on our Discord chat server by visiting transmissionspodcast.com/Discord. If you would like to learn more about how you could support the Transmissions Podcast, just visit transmissionspodcast.com/support. Thank you all for listening, and we'll see you again next week.
Record!
Just made it.
Yes, I did it. I didn't say anything, so hopefully that didn't mess you up.
So now he's not counting down. He's not saying record.
Yes, I took the hint. That's all our comics news, so let's move on to our comic review. And here we will wait for Jeremy
to come back. You sure it's a guy?
Well, I'm guessing from the characters.
It is.
Predacons and Orion Pax.
Yeah, and it says he is also known for his roles. I'm sorry, Mike. Blame Daryl for that one.